Imperial Media presents The Brooke Taylor Show. Encounter, adventure, evangelize. And now your host, Brooke Taylor.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to The Brooke Taylor Show. Thank you for being a part of the program and Happy New Year to you. Praise the Lord for new beginnings. Thank you, Lord, especially this year now more than ever as we step off on a brand new church year. It might feel like we're carrying the old ball and chain with us from the last year, the heaviness of 2020. It's still with us in a lot of ways. It just shows you again how we have the world, the rest of the world. We're still living in 2020, but then the church and the promise of resurrection, the newness of the liturgical year and coming, that's the meaning of Advent and this season we've entered into. When you're in a situation like we are this year, this is where we see God work most potently in our lives. And that's the quote from C.S. Lewis. God whispers to us in our pleasures. He speaks in our conscience, but he shouts in our pain. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. And he gets our attention. So that's what our message was on Sunday with the gospel. Be attentive, be ready. It's something we talked about on last week's show, the scattered life versus the attentive life. And that goes hand in hand with going to confession, fasting from the things that clutter our minds and cloud our eyes so that we can clearly see what he's saying to us, how he's calling us, and also setting up an order to our days. And the thing is too, just like Lent, I think it's good to remember that even if you just do one thing, not everything, but one thing. Caroline is making a cameo, by the way. She's coming down to the studio. Can you say hello? Come here. Hello. Say God bless you.
God bless you.
Okay, thank you, Carolina. Okay, so yes, going back to just doing one thing, to say, I'm going to kneel beside my bed when I pray. I was just talking to a friend about this and that advice given to her in confession to actually get down and kneel beside the bed when she prays. It doesn't have to be a 30-minute prayer. For us, it was Advent Eve and our family got together and it was almost like a New Year's Eve kind of thing where we stopped for a moment. We thanked God for preserving us another year. We prayed that we would all have a good Advent journey. We prayed the family rosary and it didn't take long. It wasn't complicated, but it helped to just close out everything else so that we could focus on that flame burning, the light of the world, God with us, Emmanuel, and focusing our eyes on him. And that's actually the theme of today's show. The gift of beauty and true beauty, pure beauty, holy beauty gives us just a taste of that heavenly banquet and how it elevates us up to the heavens. And that's where today's guest comes in, the gift that she has for bringing beauty to life, sacred art in the tradition of the Western masters. And so we're going to go on a little art retreat this week with my guest, Gwyneth Thompson Briggs. Here's my conversation with her.
Gwyneth Thompson Briggs is a contemporary sacred artist dedicated in particular to reviving techniques from the Renaissance and Baroque eras, looking to the masters of Western art, and her art decorates churches, schools, private homes throughout the Americas and Europe. And in 2017, which I definitely want to ask about, she was commissioned to create a work as a gift for Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. Honored now to introduce you to Gwyneth Thompson Briggs. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so thankful that we connected because one of the challenges of a segment like this is conveying the fullness of the exquisite art that you create. And most of us will be listening to this show in a audio medium, but what you do is a visual medium. So we entrust this task to the Holy Spirit to transmit the heart of what you're doing, because I know that your spiritual life comes out incredibly in your work, and hopefully people will find you online. But I'll say for me, I first discovered your work on Twitter. And for those that haven't seen your work, I felt like I was transported back to the Accademia Gallery in Florence or St. Peter's in Rome. That seems to be, is that fair, your inspiration where you pull from, as I mentioned, Baroque or Renaissance?
Well, yeah, that's true. But I have to say, I have to be a little bit restrained in looking at some of the great works of art from the Western tradition, because I look at them and I realize so far beyond me that it makes me want to just quit. But then I think, well, you know what? Something needs to be maintained for future generations. And so looking at sort of the history of this technique, there was certainly a rupture where this knowledge that had been handed down in person, suddenly the knowledge was not being communicated to the next generation. So I feel like I'm part of a number of artists now that are sort of trying to put together the pieces and reach out to help the next group take them up.
To look upon your work, it really is like being invited back into that tradition. And is it something you ever imagined that you would be doing as a career?
Well, no, absolutely not. You know, I think that becoming a sacred artist has been such a gift because I never really trusted in God enough to say, oh, you know, I think I'll be an artist. I just thought, oh gosh, you can't be an artist. I might as well say I'd like to be a professional golfer. But
how has your devotion to faith influenced your art? Because it really does come through.
For every commission that I get, it's a wonderful opportunity to learn more about the faith. And so for each of my upcoming paintings that I'm working on right now, I'm reading the books on the entire history and hagiography. And it's just this endless amount of information and knowledge that I'll be able to work on for the rest of my life.
For those that don't know, can you explain hagiography?
Oh, certainly. That's like Lives of the Saints. You know, these were real people, and I try to incorporate some of that humanity into the portraits that I do, so they're not just flat and superficial in the way that even photographs can be at times.
Let's get into that. I find it fascinating to learn about that creative process. And one example was in the work that was commissioned for Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI. You painted St. Augustine. Can you describe your vision and how you brought that piece to life?
It had to be executed in sort of a panic because I only had a couple of weeks to do it. The priest who commissioned it was going to visit him and had a private audience. And so he wanted something to give him in person. And I thought, well, you know, oil paints are impossible. That takes like a month to dry. So I have to go with watercolor. And then the commission was of St. Augustine, who Pope Emeritus has a great devotion to. So I contacted the local diocese and was able to get access to actual pontifical gloves and a mitre. I can't believe they trusted me, but I'm always having to make strange requests. Fortunately, that came through. I found a model, an older man that had a nice long beard, and got everything positioned in my studio and then just went for it.
When you see the final product, how often are you surprised? How does that work
for you? Every time. Every time, absolutely. I always have a concept, you know, where I'll just say, this is what I'm going to paint, and then it just goes in a different direction. Or it's always the accidents that you say, oh, well, that was an accident, but that looks pretty good. I'm going to keep that, and I'm going to incorporate it into the next painting.
We're in a time of Advent now, and one of your pieces is Magi in Adoration. And without having the visual right here to see, can you tell us about that, what you've painted and why you put the Magi where you did and the execution of that?
Yeah, that was such a delightful little project. This was actually for a Christmas card for my parish. And I was hesitant at first because I always work from life. And it's kind of hard to get a camel and, you know, kings into my studio as well as the attendants. So what I did was I asked the pastor, could I bring statues from the life-size nativity scene into my little studio. So all of these, I guess, half life-size statues got wrapped in towels and bubble wrap, and we brought it into my studio and I set it up with natural lighting. And it was just so much fun to try to arrange them in such a way that formed sort of a pleasing grouping. And then I just completed it within a few hours.
One of the most breathtakingly astounding pieces that I have ever seen is your Hidden Martyrs painting. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. You know, this comes from the fact that I, you know, I'm vehemently pro-life, and yet I just didn't know what I could do to help the movement. And so I, you know, being a mother myself, I just thought, this is imperative. Something must be done. So when I was contemplating who would be the best patron saint to pray to for anyone involved in the pro-life movement, I thought, you know, the Holy Innocents are these innocent babies that were just slaughtered under Herod and yet are now in heaven, and they personally didn't have any renowned accomplishments. We don't know their names, anything like that. And yet they could be powerful intercessors for us. So I used my own children as sort of a composite, as I painted a toddler, maybe between the ages of 1 and 2, holding a triumphant palm of martyrdom. There's a darkened sky in the background, sort of suggesting the foreboding experience, and yet the children are calm and hopeful as they look up to heaven. I just thought it would be too grisly to show the moment of martyrdom, but I did want to suggest the fact that it took place. So under their feet, you do see a pool of blood, and yet the physical child is still sort of glowing and radiant as if they've already experienced the resurrection.
It's important to recognize these souls as we walk through the Advent season and we contemplate the entire mystery of the incarnation, the nativity, what the implications of that means and what it means for us today. And so I love how you use your child from the here and now to speak to the lives of these beautiful souls and their dignity and the layers of symbolism that come into that. It's just extraordinary. Also, an honorable mention, because every image on your website, every painting, every work that you've done really merits an entire show. But I do want to ask about Our Lady of Sorrows. You, again, on your blog, I love that you have almost these meditative explanations. Can you tell us about the process of what you wanted to convey and to describe it? Maybe you can do a better job than I certainly can. Is so powerful, whether it's the Spanish mantilla veil over her or the swords piercing her heart. All the story behind it is just extraordinary.
Oh, thanks. I've always been really drawn to these sort of Spanish depictions of Our Lady and the Saints. So this is sort of an exploration of this Spanish tradition. So in acknowledgement of that, that's why I chose to use these layers and layers of lace mantillas about Our Lady. This painting, Our Lady of Sorrows, it's sort of about the hidden nature of sorrow and how internal it is, and how we can't just understand Mary at all. There's so much mystery that is enshrouding her that really all we can do is recognize that there are all of these layers.
And you did have a live model for that, is that right?
Yes, that's right. There's a lovely girl that I saw from Daily Mass, and I saw her and I was like, oh, she would be perfect. So I'm always jumping out of people and saying, oh, you've got the perfect beard for this saint. Or just recently, I found a girl that seems like she would be perfect for the depiction of Saint Bibiana.
Bibiana, I'm not familiar with her.
She's the patron saint of Los Angeles, actually, and she was a Roman martyred at age 13, and her remains are in Los Angeles.
I did not even know that. Okay, wow. And have you been commissioned to paint her?
Yes, well, actually, just to do a portrait study. So this is going to be just really a delight to get to paint the beauty of a young teenage girl.
Wow.
Not afraid of being martyred in light of holding onto her beliefs.
Incredible. And I'm kind of smiling because I'm imagining the scene of encountering the young woman at Mass and saying, can I paint you? And just
yes.
That processing in her brain. And is this weird? Is this, you know, but now to be a muse and the way that you capture, and I'm looking right now at the Our Lady of Sorrows, where you do have white accent on the mantilla. And it looks, as you mentioned, like layers. There's not just one, and these are the long, beautiful, ornate lace mantillas we're talking about. Did you dress her up that way? And how did she receive that request?
Yes. Well, you know, everything came together very nicely because my mother had a collection of all of these different veils. And so it was very convenient as well. But yeah, she was very amenable. And artists have quite a reputation now. And so most mothers of maybe homeschooling children would say, you know, maybe I have to think about whether I want my child to be an artist's model. But I do feel blessed being a woman artist and a mother and a Catholic. I get to have the freedom to work with people that maybe wouldn't necessarily be comfortable in more avant-garde artist settings. And I love working with people who are not professional models because there's just sort of a candidness and a naturalness that is wonderful to incorporate. But I think everyone I meet looks like some saint. It's just a matter of having the opportunity to paint that saint and then to convince them to trust me.
I would love also any advice you might have in introducing children to great art. And it is one of the greatest privileges I know as a mom when I myself was able to fall in love all over again with great literature and great art and then trying to make it age appropriate. And again, we all are at different stages and we shouldn't limit our children. The profundity of what they might pull from something may surprise us. And we're very blessed here to have the Cleveland Museum of Art, which I believe is one of the best in the country. But for parents, where would you suggest beginning from Giotto to Michelangelo? There's so many, Bernini, that really is endless. For, let's say, a younger age group, and then let's go up a little bit, where would you suggest, let's start with preschool and then maybe go up to the best ways to introduce them to beautiful art?
Yeah, well, I would say, first of all, you know, when you select children's books, you know, make sure that they're as beautiful as possible. But children's books don't necessarily have to be children's books. You know, I think with my toddlers, I look at books from art history and they'll have questions like, what is that? Why is that? And they feel completely free to jump into those images. But I think more than that, it's important to have works of art in your home that are not reproductions, that are original works of art. They don't need to be masterpieces. They can be works that you have maybe done in a side class. But just the fact that it's actual paint on paper or drawing on paper, there's a different dimension to it than in a reproduction. For older children, once they start running around like crazy, then take them into a museum. Try to experience those works of art in person. It is, I think, better to just focus on a single piece rather than try to see dozens and dozens in a single day. So if you have the leisure, try to just focus on a single piece, give them paper and pencil to try to draw it themselves. It's really in the practice of attempting to create art, no matter what your attempt looks like, but that's what's going to help you really see something in a way that if you're just looking at it passively, you won't be able to see it as clearly.
I love that. And we can't conclude without touching on, for those that are watching the video, the beautiful paintings that it looks like you've just completed. St. Scholastica, I see. And is it St. Benedict?
Yes, that's right. And they're still wet. So there might be a bit of a glare, but
these are oil?
Yes, that's right. Oil on linen.
The details, the crozier. I know I saw on Twitter you actually did have a real crozier to pull from in your inspiration.
Yeah.
Can you tell us just a few of the details? Because it's in the subtleties. Study the Sistine Chapel and the Last Judgment, and you could be there for a decade and not hear all of the stories and the subtleties. And I am nowhere near any expert on art, but it really does just pull you in. And I know I was listening to something else that you did, and you were talking about the way that he was even holding the chalice with the index fingers. So all of those little things have symbolism. Can you bring us into a few of those in the works you have behind you?
Yeah, I'd love to. It's been so much fun. I keep repainting different sections, but I think I'm mostly done now. The crozier, I was not able to find a bishop who said, oh, sure, I trust you. Here's my gold and silver crozier. Instead, I was fortunate enough to be able to borrow it from a statue at my parish church. So I have a statue's crozier, which worked out well so that I can see how the light hits it. I've noticed that even though I love works that appear to be more mannerist or more lyrical and less photorealist, that as soon as I work exclusively from imagination, it loses some of the magic and the beauty. So I was able to borrow an actual Benedictine habit for St. Benedict and a Benedictine habit for St. Scholastica. The most challenging thing to borrow, though, was she's wearing a pleated wimple in the way that German Benedictines traditionally wore. Nowadays, there's only a couple of houses of nuns that wear the wimple like this because it requires a machine from the 1800s that sort of you crank it and it irons the linen to go around the face. And then it's pinned in a certain way. So this wonderful order of nuns sent me a wimple in a box with a bunch of color photos on step one, step two, step three. And that was just fascinating. Sort of the details within the painting that might be a little bit unusual in comparison to other depictions of Benedict and Scholastica are that they're depicted a bit younger. So here they're sort of in their maybe 20s, 30s prime of life. Within the croziers, there's different symbols. So for St. Benedict, there's a raven that's in the center of the crozier. And St. Scholastica, who's often depicted with a dove, has a tiny flock of doves that have just alighted onto her crozier. In the background of St. Scholastica, there's a stormy cloud because there's a story that she wanted St. Benedict to stay with her one evening. And he said, no, I have to go back to my monks. He leaves. And then the skies open up, the rain comes down, and he's compelled to stay with her. So it's an echo of her tears at his leaving.
I'm looking at it on Twitter, and St. Benedict looks as if he's looking down. He's not looking directly at the viewer, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Why? And I even see the light in his ear, which is just extraordinary. But why did you paint him where his eyes are cast down a bit?
Well, here he's holding on to the rule. So his gaze is directed a little bit outward. So his hands are clasping a book, but rather than just looking down at the rule, I wanted him to be looking beyond, sort of towards the future of his order. This is also reflected in the painting by St. Scholastica. She's actually looking above the viewer a little bit. So both of them have this sense of beyond. Even though this is a pair that's been designed together, I didn't want them to be too matchy. You know, instead there's a little bit more freedom there. But the gaze, the direction of the gaze was stipulated by the patron. And so this is really an interesting aspect of the creative process that there's always, you know, a long conversation. What do we want this painting to look like? And then I have some ideas and they have some ideas that give me more ideas. With any finished painting that you see on the website, it's really the result of a conversation. And so I'm always grateful for the clients that are clearly doing their own part to correspond to God's call.
And again, these are clients all over the world. So what a gift for you to have those surprises. You never know the request or the commission you might receive. Is there one, I know this is a difficult question, that is most close to your heart that you've done?
Oh my goodness. I think that is a hard question. There are certainly some of the first paintings I did that were quite memorable. There's one mural I did of St. Paul that was really a copy, but it was when I was teaching at a girls' school in Peru. They said they would pay for my plane ticket home if I painted this mural. So I did this giant mural of St. Paul holding a sword on the side of a building outside in Lima, Peru. And it looked down at a courtyard filled with kindergartners, and they had some llamas there as well that would wander around. So sometimes I think about that painting and I think, well, I'm not even sure if it's still there, but if it is, it's, St. Paul gazing at kindergartners and llamas.
Wow, that is extraordinary. So you said it was a copy. Was it something that you were inspired by what you saw in, on a large scale? You did that.
Well, it was a statue of St. Paul in the Vatican. And so I depicted it in color. You know, every painting has artistic challenges, but then also strange logistical challenges too. Like, for example, I had no idea how to say I need varnish in Spanish. And so I was trying to say like protective liquid plastic over the painting, and they would just look at me like, you're crazy.
It really is beautiful, and it takes us back into, I feel like I'm going on a journey. modernity doesn't invite us into this kind of sacred art as much anymore. As we mentioned in the top of the show, this tradition that has been handed down and somewhere along the line maybe got a bit fractured because the volume of this art certainly has diminished. And we look at the great cathedrals, the great stained glass windows, and for you to be invited into that and give your yes is really a gift for us beyond measure. And I want to conclude with a quote. In 1999, Pope St. John Paul the Great released a letter to artists. It's really a must read, but I wanted to pull a quote that I think so fully demonstrates your call. He's talking about the task of the artist, the men and women who have given their lives to art. And he says, "It is no less than to enter into the heart of the mystery of the incarnate God, and at the same time into the mystery of man, to declare through your art that in Christ the world is redeemed." And that is to be able to speak of the poetry of painting and what you do, such an incredibly lofty calling. So we thank you for that.
Well, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for having this conversation. So much of my experience of being an artist is really about education as well. And, you know, it's so hard to know what goes into a painting. You see the finished product, and to know the hours and the materials that go into it, it's sort of this big secret right now that I'd like to tell everyone about.
Yes, and we would love to keep hearing about it. So for those that want to connect and order, I know you have a shop, order one of your pieces. Can you give us the information?
Certainly. The website is GwynethThompsonBriggs.com. So that's Gwyneth, G-W-Y-N-E-T-H, ThompsonBriggs.com. You can also follow me on Twitter.
Thank you so much. And God bless your husband as well. Thank you for the way that you collaborate and bless us all.
Thank you so much.
Thank you again to my guest on today's show, Gwyneth Thompson Briggs. Don't you feel like you were just in the most awesome art class with the best teacher? And I think what's exciting for me is the introduction. If you're not already familiar with her work, that you are just going to love when you go to her website, seeing her gift, ordering the holy cards that she has. I think it would make a great gift to tuck into a Christmas card or even a gift, and supporting her work. And this is all building together by design. So we looked at the art this week. Next week, we're going to look at the landscape, taking a mystical retreat to Bethlehem with my friend Shibley Kando, who lives in the West Bank. He has all his life. In planning this entire season, this was the plan, to have Shibley's conversation, his interview, tucked right here at this point in Advent. And so if there's any show that you're going to hear, I really hope that it's going to be our next program with Shibley Kando as we take a retreat to Bethlehem. God bless you, friends, as you continue your Advent journey. How are you walking through this season? Please let me know. Leave feedback, thebrooktaylorshow@gmail.com. Thank you always for your support of this program, and God bless you and keep you. Until next time, peace and love.